Rise up!
This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. This is episode 315. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site that from the USA Today NFL Wire. I am without Seth Cox from Revenge of the Birds this week for the final week, as we have the first of two episodes this week and the fifth of six opponent preview shows. Today's episode, we have the Chicago Bears and the Detroit Lions, whom the Cardinals will play in Week 13 after the bye. And then, after facing the LA Rams in Week 14, they take on the Detroit Lions in Week 15. We've already previewed the NFC West teams on a previous episode, so this episode focuses on the Chicago Bears and the Detroit Lions. And next up on our opponent list, on our opponent preview, are the Chicago Bears, whom the Cardinals will play in Week 13, after their bye week, so they get the week off, and then they get to go to what could be a frigid Chicago game against the Bears. And we don't know which quarterback is going to be, but we're here to talk with Alyssa Barberi, the site editor for BearsWire.com, our sister site on the USA Today NFL Wire. Alyssa, how are you? Thank you for being on the show. It's fantastic. It's a shame that the listeners don't get to hear the fun that we've had for the last 20 minutes or so off air. It's been a hoot.
I'm doing good. Yeah, it was kind of like a little therapy session at times, you know, just nice to kind of, you know, to shoot the shit, so to say. I don't know. I love to say that on here. You can edit it out.
It's all right. No one. I don't know how many people listen to the show anyway. But hey, so what happened is that the two of us actually, in our parallel careers, both are in education, and that's a word we can't use in front of kids. And so sometimes you need to use it. Sometimes you need to use it.
Exactly.
So
especially with this team.
Yeah, we completely understand being, you know. I'm not old enough to have experienced that. I know that the Cardinals and the Bears were one-time cross-time rivals way, way, way back when. And then, dating back to even the St. Louis days, because St. Louis and Chicago, they're not friendly. And so now here, the Cardinals have been in Arizona for the last, you know, 30-something years. And guess what? There are so many Bears fans here. It's ridiculous because Phoenix Mesa is like West Coast Chicago. I grew up in Mesa, Arizona, where the Chicago Cubs have had their spring training. And I, to this day, still know more, probably might know more Cubs fans than Diamondbacks fans, which is, it's kind of annoying, but.
Hey, Chicago fans travel well.
Yes. It's a thing.
When they suck, which is a testament to just how obsessed and perhaps, you know, a little insane that they are. Definitely.
So we've got the Bears on the schedule this year, as the Cardinals will face the NFC North this season. Let's take it back to the 2020 season for the Bears, which was in some ways a success, in other ways a disappointment. As the Bears made the playoffs over the Cardinals by virtue of conference / head-to-head, well, common opponent tiebreaker. So the Bears make the playoffs at 8-8 because Zane Gonzalez couldn't make a 41-yard field goal in New England. But it's a play. They did what the Cardinals wish they could. So take us back to the 2020 season, the highs and the lows. And it feels like last year was a tough year, even though it ended up with the postseason.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from the start, when you had a quarterback competition with Mitchell Trubisky and Nick Foles, I mean, that kind of started out on a low point to begin with. And, you know, with those, the first couple of games where they had those miraculous comebacks, the one against the Lions and then against the Falcons within the first 3 weeks, like, I think like that was the high point. It's like, okay, they're winning ugly, but they're still finding ways to win. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how you're winning as long as you're stacking up wins, which is something that the Bears have struggled with since 2018. So I think the defense in the first half of the season, they looked like their old selves, 2019, you know, kind of without almost shades of 2018, but again, those turnovers were eluding them. So, I mean, that was probably the high point. Obviously, when Nick Foles came in to replace Trubisky off the bench against Atlanta, I think that was a high point, and people were like, wow, maybe this might actually work. You know, like maybe Foles is going to, you know, but maybe he's going to come in and lead this team, but I guess it only happens off the bench. So maybe he should have just been, you know, coming off the bench the whole year, because it was pretty ugly there, a rough patch, which basically forced them to go back to Trubisky. It took an injury, but I think he knew from the start that Matt Nagy was just done with Mitch. He was ready to move on, and he thought Foles was going to be the guy to do that. Obviously, that did not happen. So again, the offense is just one of the worst in the league. So that was a struggle to watch week in and week out. But as Bears fans have been accustomed to, the defense has usually been the saving grace that has kept them in games or won them games. So when they hit a rough patch at the end of the year where they were giving up 30 plus points, when they were only giving up about like 20, 21 per game for most of the season, it was rough. And they lost the 6 games in a row, which that I thought for sure was the end of Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace in Chicago. And I think I remember thanking the Cardinals for the Bears getting into the postseason. And I'm like, in retrospect, you know, Right. Looking back, I'm like, well, maybe if they hadn't, you know, and they weren't a playoff team, maybe they could have used that as an excuse to get rid of Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace. But I don't know what ownership is doing. That was pretty rough, the 6-game win streak. But then watching and losing, not only losing to the Packers, but getting hammered by them twice. I mean, it feels like it's an annual thing, but it's never easy. But I guess, you know, that when they went, they put up 30 plus points, I think it was 3 or 4 games in a row on offense, you know, albeit against terrible teams or terrible defenses, you know, that was a bit of a high point, because it felt like, wow, this is the first time the offense is gelling. It's taken Matt Nagy a year and a half to kind of get this offense going. And they finally let David Montgomery run the football. Like, that was a high point. I think you saw some of the players that who I think are going to be big contributors this year, like a Montgomery, Darnell Mooney as a rookie. I felt so bad for him because he was constantly getting separation from guys. But again, Jalen Ramsey, right? Like, there was a Twitter feud started between Bears fans and Jalen Ramsey because Darnell just juked him entirely. So he never got the ball because the quarterbacks couldn't get it to him. They were overthrowing him constantly. But you know, seeing some of the younger guys, like even on defense, like Bilal Nichols, like it just kind of showed you that the pieces are in place, that this team can find success. But again, I think it goes back to offense and quarterback, which obviously they addressed because they cleaned house with Trubisky. Nick Foles is there, but only because they can't get rid of him.
Quarterback purgatory is something Cardinals fans are used to. If we look at now, we hit the jackpot with Kyler Murray. But that took a 2018 season with Sam Bradford and Josh Rosen, and you know I can think back since basically 1989, since I started following the team when I was a teenager, that in terms of quarterbacks that were good. So quarterbacks you got excited about. There was Tim Rosenbaugh for a season, and then injuries. Jake Plummer was exciting and super popular, but the problem is, and you look at his statistics over his Cardinals career, he was awful. And he had a good year. I think there was one, I don't think he ever had more touchdowns than interceptions in any year with the Cardinals. He ended up being pretty solid with the Broncos. But then you go to Kurt Warner, Carson Palmer, and then everything else in between until Kyler Murray. We went through basically everything, and we feel your pain, because we know that Chicago has kind of had the same quarterback issues historically, which takes us to the offseason, where, now granted, you did get a playoff game under y'all's belt, albeit, honestly, if we look at last season, the way the things ended, it was a case of the Bears or the Cardinals making it as that 7th playoff team. It was good to make the playoffs, and I would have been happy if the Cardinals made the playoffs. But based on the play down the stretch, I mean, we lose to John Wolford and C.J. Beathard. I mean, how can you want to be in the playoffs or expect to be in? But anyhow, offseason comes. It should have been, if it weren't for the playoffs, you might blow up the front office and coaching staff, but they don't. So they're given another lifeline, but there's no more Mitch Trubisky, and instead, there's the rumor of Russell Wilson. Russ, who we were thrilled to perhaps get out of town, out of Seattle, because the Seahawks have been really good since there. So how close was it? So we know that Russ didn't necessarily ask for a trade, but he did put the Bears on his list of teams, hypothetically, he would go to. And supposedly there was a deal on the table for 3 first-rounders. What truth is there to that, to how close they were to getting Russ?
Well, when you listen to, you know, all the reports that were coming out, like, I know Russell's like, you know, there was never a trade. I didn't ask for a trade. But actually, like, the two GMs met at Trey Lance's pro day. And that's when Pace made the offer with the three first round picks and a couple of players, which there were rumors to be possibly Kyle Fuller, because obviously they released him to free up cap space. Maybe Akeem Hicks has been another one. So, I mean, I think it got close to the fact where they were offering this. Now, whether Seattle was legit interested, you know, that's another question, because there were rumors that Pete Carroll is the one that actually, you know, just slammed the door on the deals, like, no, this isn't happening. But I mean,
Pete Carroll's old. Yeah. He wants to win.
Exactly.
He doesn't want to rebuild.
He's already done that, right? I mean, I know he can't. He could probably do it again, but why would he want to? You got Russell Wilson in place. So, I mean, it wasn't just like one mention. You know, it wasn't just like, oh, one off, like, oh, the Bears are interested or they made an offer. It was something that kind of like lasted for a couple months there. And it just kind of kept coming back to it. The Bears are interested. Then when you had the offer being made, I was like, okay. So again, I don't know exactly how close it came to being done, but that Ryan Pace did put an offer on the table. And then you go from Russell Wilson to Andy Dalton. And that just, I think,
I don't know if there could be
or nearly broke the Bears fan base.
Could you go from a higher high to a lower start? Like,
no,
I couldn't believe, like, so they had Russ Wilson on the table and they ended up with Andy Dalton.
Yeah. How do you think that a fan base is going to react to that? Like, clearly for like quarterbacks, like starved fan base. And you go from having a dynamic threat at quarterback, star quarterback, a proven star quarterback, because one of the concerns has been, you know, can they develop quarterbacks, or even can Ryan Pace make the right decision to bring in the right quarterback, as we saw with Trubisky when he had Mahomes and Watson on the table. So, I mean, it's just going from Wilson to, it wasn't just losing out on Russell Wilson. It was going to Andy Dalton, like, not long after. It was just like, what a slap in the face. Yeah. It was bad.
Right. So aside from that, we went to the draft with Justin Fields. I mean, it sounds like they believe in Andy Dalton, so that there is a plan in place. That in terms of free agency, who are the impact losses and who are the potential impact additions this year?
Well, I think when they cut Kyle Fuller, that was a big loss at cornerback there. I mean, Kendall Vildor, he's showing promise in minicamp so far. But I mean, you lose a 2-time Pro Bowler like Kyle Fuller, who he brings the energy. He's a leader. The way he can just kind of lay a hit, like, it just kind of energizes the defense. Like, he did it the right way. The only reason was they asked him to take a pay cut. He couldn't do it. I think that is the biggest loss. The defensive line has always been the most consistent unit, I think, on the Bears for a long time. And losing Roy Robertson Harris, who went to the Jaguars, like, that was a big hit. And then Brent Urban, he left in free agency and went to Dallas. But they did bring back Mario Edwards, so that was a big one. Losing Mitch Trubisky ended up working out for the Bears, now getting Justin Fields. So, I mean, looking at some of those losses, I mean, I would say those would probably be the big losses. I mean, even though they did address the tackle position, getting rid of both Charles Leno and Bobby Massey, it's just like a little, it's rocky because you have Tevin Jenkins, who he played mostly on the right side at Oklahoma State. Now he's your franchise left tackle. And then at right tackle, it's either going to be Jermaine Ifedi or another rookie. Like, I mean, that's not the most confident. I can understand why they want to put Andy Dalton out there, because you don't want to put, you know, subject your rookie quarterback to getting the crap out of him. So
instead of Russell Wilson, you got Ifedi. That's basically what you, that you, you saw. If you want to look at it that way, instead of Russell, Wilson, you can instead of Russell Wilson, you got Jermaine Ifedi. Because
wouldn't Russ want to come to Chicago if he had Ifedi there?
Right. Coming up next with the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk on the web. We continue the conversation with Bears Wire managing editor Alyssa Barbieri. We talk about their draft, Justin Fields, their plan for Justin Fields, the rest of the draft class, and then their outlook for the 2021 season. That's going to next on Rise Up Sea Red. Now, obviously, Allen Robinson is still in the field, is still in the fold there. What other notable additions did they make?
I think the draft was huge for them. Obviously, Justin Fields.
Which couldn't have worked out better.
I never thought in a million years it would happen. I was like, I felt bad. I remember on draft day, people are like trying to speak it into existence. I'm like, there's no way. There's no way. Even if they did manage to trade up, he's not going to be there. Like, and even like as he kept falling and like it was getting closer and closer, I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, no, there's no way. Don't get your hopes up. Because as Bears fans, you're used to getting our hopes up and being let down. So, I mean, I think that and like what they were able to do to get Tevin Jenkins, also trading up to get him in the second round. And then some of the day two picks. I mean, this is Ryan Pace's best draft. And I think that what he was able to do in the draft, you know, yeah, fingers crossed. But like looking at it like immediately on paper, I mean, what he was able to do in, especially with the later rounds, because they had a lot of 6th round picks. And getting some depth, but also getting some, you know, of course, potential steals, which that's the one thing. He's not been good at drafting in the first round, but he's been able to get some of those late round steals. Like Darnell Mooney was an example from last year. He got him in the 5th round, and he immediately climbed to the number 2 receiver role behind Allen Robinson. So I think the draft, this could be that game-changing draft for Ryan Pace again if they are able to develop everyone correctly. And, you know, we'll see how it pans out because it's way too early. But
right.
I think the draft – I felt like after the Andy Dalton thing, it was just kind of like up. Everything went up. And the draft was like the changing point because people were trying to – ready to get Pace out of town and all this. And now everyone loves him. But we'll see how long that lasts.
Well, right. And ultimately – It's not going to matter what the guys down in the draft do. It's going to come down to Justin Fields, which it seems like they want to delay his playing as much as possible. Does it sound like they really want to keep him on the bench for an entire year? Do they really want to give him the Mahomes treatment, or will it be get him in there sooner rather than later? Or is it just a... Or is it going to be, as we talked off the air, Sam Bradford, Josh Rosen?
I think that when you look at this, this has the Justin Fields pick has Matt Nagy's fingerprints all over it. Like this is their last chance, right? This is their like Matt Nagy finally gets his quarterback. So I think obviously how Fields performs is going to dictate whether Nagy has a job here in a few years. So I think that he's being overly cautious. He doesn't want to throw him out there, but at the same time, you can't just force him on the bench if he's the better option, if he proves that he's ready. Because I think he's one of, you know, aside from Trevor Lawrence, one of the most the NFL ready quarterback, you know, out there. So, which is why they obviously they were targeting him. But I mean, he's still like, he's saying that obviously that Andy Dalton is the one. He actually said that there's no way that Fields can win the starting job in training camp, which is ridiculous. I thought like at first it was just, no, for now, Dalton's the one. Justin Fields is the 2. We'll see what happens. If he said that, that'd be fine. But the fact that he's not even giving him a chance to win the job, like what if he proves that he's ready? I mean, I think because you look back at Nagy, he's a Kansas City guy. Like he wants to replicate what Andy Reid has going there, which it's not going to happen because Nagy's not Andy Reid, first off.
And Andy Dalton is not Alex Smith.
Exactly. He's not at that. That was, people forget that was a playoff team, and Alex Smith was having an MVP year that year. I mean, if Andy Dalton has an MVP year, you know, go with God, but I don't think that's going to happen.
How could you possibly expect that out of Andy Dalton? He's
never.
In his time in Cincinnati, good quarterback. Winning quarter, like he's a guy you can win with, but he's not going to be a guy that is he's the reason you're winning.
Exactly. And I think like that's what they wanted in place. They wanted to develop Fields behind a veteran who you can, I mean, I think they're banking on that defense, which they have for most of their, you know, the 101 years existence of this franchise. It's been all the defense. So I think that they're just like hoping, because the defense kept them in games. They even won them games until they, you know, had that rough stretch at the end of the year. So having Dalton, who can win games for you with that defense and gives you time to develop Fields, you know, obviously Nagy wants to, he's trying to replicate the Patrick Mahomes model. But again, no one is Patrick Mahomes, but Patrick Mahomes. So, I mean, I understand where you want him to rest, and it worked out for Mahomes. But again, if at any time in that season during 2017, if Alex Smith was struggling, like I'm assuming Dalton will at some point, given the schedule, and it doesn't help that you're going up against Aaron Donald week one. If at any point that Smith was struggling, you can't tell me that they weren't going to put Mahomes in. Like it just, it, that's just how it worked out. You can't force a plan. That can be the plan for now, but if it changes, Nagy needs to be willing to go with it. But that's right. Been one of his downfalls, is he's been stubborn. You know, whether that was, you know, sticking with Foles when he should have gone back to Trubisky last year a little bit earlier. Not that Nick either Foles. One of them was the answer.
Nick Foles is
the
answer.
But, like, he's been stubborn. He's never the answer.
Except in Philadelphia, for some reason, there's some magic with him in Philly. Because his 2 years, those 2 years, one, when he was fantastic, 2014 with Chip Kelly, and then when he replaced Wentz, you're like, he's like two completely different players. Then when he's at the Rams, he was no good with the Rams. He was with the Jaguars, he was no good. I mean, he's all right. He's
the Eagles don't want him back,
right? They already know the magic. The magic has worn off. You can't bank on that more than once.
We'll pay you to take him. Get him off. Because, like, it is cheaper to keep him on the roster than release him. Like, that's why they would stick with him.
Oh, man.
And, so hopefully the Jets, you know, smart up and they want to trade for him. Like, it won't take a lot. We just want to get rid of that. Free up $6 million in cap space. That would be very helpful.
Yeah, that's like, because you've got Dalton, you've got Fields, and then you've just got Foles there. That's rough.
Three quarterbacks on the 53-man roster. Jeez.
Hey, we did the same thing last year. Brett Hundley wasn't active at all last year, and we went with Chris Streveler when a CFL guy when Mara got hurt. In fairness, Cliff Kingsbury said very clear, and it dates back to training camp. Streveler won the backup job. But Hundley's salary was almost completely guaranteed. And there's still value for a vet like that on the roster. He'd been the backup before, so he wasn't a bad guy in the locker room. So if you're going to have to pay him anyway, have him burn a roster spot. But yeah, so let's look at the 2021 season. What's the outlook and expectations for this coming year?
I'm looking at the season, obviously, with the – I'm glad they added the 17th regular season game, because now it's no more of this finishing 8-8. Right. Oh, look, we finished 8-8. We made the playoffs. That's a reason. Like, see, it wasn't a bad season. Yeah, but it wasn't a good season either. So, I mean, looking at their schedule, I know it's hard to judge a schedule this early in the year, but they do have a bit of a tough stretch coming up here. You know, if they're looking for the perfect place to put, like, where to insert Justin Fields, there's really not like a good spot if you want to do it a little bit later on in the season. I have a feeling, though, by the time the Bears and Cardinals play in December, that Fields will be the starter by then. So to watch Fields and Kyler Murray, I think that's going to be
exciting. That'll be fun.
As a football fan, that's a game you want to watch.
Yes. So when is Chicago's bye? I don't know the schedule off the top of my head.
It is week. I have it in front of me. It's after they play Pittsburgh on Monday Night Football. I think that's week 9 or 10.
Okay. So that would be, it's completely viable for Fields to be in by then, because kind of the bye week is oftentimes when you make a transition at quarterback to give him an extra week of work, which means that would be roughly his, if that were to happen, then it could be Fields' third start, which would be what he would have a little bit of footing and maybe slow down a little bit. Yeah. But
I'm looking at that stretch. There's a stretch of games before the bye, which might kill Andy Dalton. And that's playing the Packers, the Buccaneers, the 49ers, and the Steelers. Like,
There you go.
That might do it.
Yeah. That sounds like the perfect transition to Fields after that.
Yes.
Do you think that the Bears are a playoff team this year?
No. I mean, I didn't think they were last year, and I just, God, there shouldn't have even been that seventh playoff spot. Like,
hey,
they just should not have made
it. I'm taking it because that means we can make it. We can make it now.
But is it enough to make it and continuously just kind of lose? They haven't won a playoff game since 2010. It's been 11 years. They haven't won a playoff game. And it's just like, I mean, because then you're losing draft spots too. I mean, like, now that would help because the Giants have their first round pick next year. But I mean, look how many spots they dropped because they made the playoffs just to, you know, get embarrassed in the wild card round. So, I mean, I don't know how beneficial that ended up being, but I mean, again, it was just another thing so Matt Nagy could say, hey, we made the playoffs two of the last 3 years. Yeah, but only one of them really counts.
Ron Rivera, he's pulling a Ron Rivera right now.
Oh, Ron.
Ron Rivera, and that was him, and like, we won the division. We made the playoffs, and he's winning the division with 7 and 8 wins. That's what he's going to do in Washington, too. That's the crazy thing.
I was saying last year, I want the Bears to apply for a transfer to the NFC East. Mostly so we don't have to play the Packers, but also because
the Cardinals at least could have claim to it because they used to be in the NFC East.
There you go. Okay. You guys can apply for the transfer there.
But awesome. So looking at that game, how do you like the matchup? I don't want to do predictions or anything, but how do you like the Bears defense against that Cardinals offense, which in stretches last year was fantastic, and honestly, with what they've done this offseason, the wide receiver room's better, the offensive line is better. If everything stays, everything goes the way it's supposed to, I see a top 5 offense in scoring and in yards going up against a vaunted defense like that. How do you see that matchup going?
I mean, there are still questions that the Bears have on defense, so it'll probably be a little bit, it will be a lot more clear as we head into training camp and stuff. But I mean, I think the Cardinals offense scares me, especially in terms of, you know, against the Bears secondary, which, I mean, I'm hoping for a bounce back year for Eddie Jackson, especially playing with new defensive coordinator Sean Desai, who knows how to plan, let him roam center field, let him make his plays. But the cornerback, you know, vacancy without Kyle Fuller, that really makes me nervous, which would mean that you're going to have Jalen Johnson going up against DeAndre Hopkins, which, you know, does, you know, that puts fear into
that'd
you.
Be fun. That'd be fun.
I mean, yeah, fun for you guys. no, I mean, I think Jalen had a great rookie year. It's just, I think that'll be a good challenge for him. That scares me in terms of the secondary, but mobile quarterbacks, I mean, at times they've given the Bears a rough time, but they can also, they've shown to handle them, especially if they can get the push up front, which is going to be big for that defensive line. And, you know, hopefully I think Khalil Mack will have another big year. I know he didn't have the stats, but he's somebody, it just, his presence is consistently felt. He's getting pressure up there all the time. I think it's a bigger question of Robert Quinn, who just has been a bust since signing him. He's old, but when you're paying him $70 million, you gotta get the job done. Just saying. So, I mean, just kind of looking at it, when you're going defense against offense, I think it'll be a good challenge for the Bears defense. So, especially at that point of the year, I think we'll know exactly what this Bears defense can do if they, you know, if they can find success, because they're playing some great quarterbacks this year and some potentially top offenses. So I think it'll be a good challenge for them, and we can really see what they're made of when you go up against an offense like this. So I'm excited.
Well, Alyssa, appreciate the time. That's Alyssa Barbieri from BearsWire.com. If you haven't, hit the site up. They've got all the Bears content you could imagine, just like we do that at CardsWire for us. Thanks, Bart. Alyssa, as always, I appreciate the time. And coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web will be our next opponent preview. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. And our next opponent preview in our series, it brings us to the month of December, when in week 15, a familiar foe comes to town, and that would be the Detroit Lions playing the Cardinals for the fifth year in a row and for the eighth time in the last nine seasons. And we have Jeff Risdom from Lions Wire, the site editor from LionsWire.com, one of our USA Today NFL Wire sites, on the line to kind of give us a rundown of what's happened with the Lions over the last over the offseason and last season. Jeff, welcome to the show again. I can't remember. We talked, was it last year because of the Browns? No, it had to have been for the Lions because the Cardinals didn't play the Browns last year. Jeff covers both teams, and so if
I do.
He covers I wear a lot of hats. We got to hear from Jeff a year ago when we did this same series, and the Lions got the best of the Cardinals this year. And then didn't get the best of really most anyone else the rest of the year.
No, they did not. And that's why you're looking at a very, very different Lions team than the one that we talked about a year ago.
So let's start with the 2020 season. And what were the expectations entering that year? And then what were the kind of the highs and the lows? Obviously, they cleaned house, did a lot of things. Yeah. But what were the highs and the lows of last season?
Yeah, so they went into the year, and it was kind of a make or break year for Matt Patricia, the old coach, Bob Quinn, the old GM. The expectations were that this should be a team that competes for a playoff berth, and it was very clear very early that that was not going to be the case. They were fairly loaded on offense with Matthew Stafford throwing to Kenny Galladay, Marvin Jones, T.J. Hockenson, Danny Amendola. They signed Adrian Peterson, who still had it. And it was just nothing worked. Nothing that they tried worked schematically. Matt Patricia, to go into the lows, Matt Patricia's coaching was a definite low. He just didn't inspire players. For a defensive mastermind and a literal rocket scientist, he has a degree in rocket science from RPI. He had no concept of what worked in the NFL in defense in terms of personnel. They asked the outside cornerbacks, Jeff Okuda being the number three overall pick in the draft. They asked him to line up in press man and then not press. It was very, very weird. The best safety on the team is Tracy Walker. They moved him from where he's at his best, which is playing over the top or in a split situation, and asked him to play in the box. And that's not what he's good at. There was just a lot of befuddling decisions. Honestly, it was weird how they approached things, and they didn't take advantage of the good players that they had. They didn't play to their strengths. Patricia gave an inordinate amount of rope to the lesser players that he sort of liked and gravitated towards. And aside from that, it was a boring team by design. They were fairly bland on offense. They were terrible and bland on defense. And it just didn't work. Bright spots, there weren't a lot, honestly. The offensive line played fairly well. Romeo Okwara got 10.5 sacks almost in spite of the scheme, so that was certainly a big positive. But there's a reason why there's so much radical change in Detroit, and a lot of it started at the top. There's a new GM. We actually have a new owner now, too. Sheila Ford Hamp is the daughter of the former owner, Mrs. Ford. And she has breathed life into the organization, much needed life, and much more competitive perspective. So the arrow is pointing up from last year, and it needed to, because I've been around football a long time. I can't recall a team that disliked football as much as the 2020 Detroit Lions did.
So, but that brings us to the next couple of things. There were obviously two main moves that were the prelude to the offseason. That was the hiring of Dan Campbell and as coach, and then the Matthew Stafford trade to the Rams. And I've got a question about that, which brought over Jared Goff. But first, the Dan Campbell hire. What's your take on that? Obviously, so far, in terms of sound bites, he sounds like he is a blast to cover. So from the our perspective, he gives you something to write, something to say.
That's for sure.
And that there's at least that. So it feels like there's a little bit of a pulse, as you were saying off the air.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it's funny because, you know, you hear about, you know, the introductory press conference is epic. You're talking about biting kneecaps off and all kinds of profanity. It was glorious, man. It was something to behold. And he's dropped some other things. He came out in the press conference a couple weeks ago wearing a racing helmet because he was going to be the Grand Marshal of the Detroit Grand Prix. He only wore the helmet for like 20 seconds and then took it off and then actually talked a lot of very serious football. And I think that's getting lost is the fact that he is a very smart football guy. Like, there's a lot going on upstairs. It just doesn't show that. He sort of plays up the dumb meathead a little bit. And the players, I can tell you from being at the practices during minicamp and OTAs, the players love it. There's a lot of very tangible energy that has been absent from the Lions organization in some time. They also, one of the things that Campbell has done, he's brought in a ton of recognizable former players. Deuce Staley is the running backs coach. Antoine Randall L is the wide receivers coach. Aubrey Pleasant is the defensive backs coach. You know, Hank Fraley is the offensive line coach. He's actually a holdover. You know, there's a lot of guys.
That brings a lot of respect to players. Like, whether or not they're good coaches, when you bring in former players who played at a pretty high level, when they're the coaches, the players listen.
Absolutely. And that you can definitely tell that. It was very evident. And the last coaching staff, I don't want to say that the Patricia's staff was not like engaged, but they weren't the type that would like challenge players, you know, or the players wouldn't respect them when they were challenged because they didn't know that they played. You know, Patricia played at a small school, you know, decades ago. You know, these are familiar guys. These are people that, you know, hey, I played with him in Madden when I was 10, you know, right. And there's an energy with that comes along with it. And, you know, to like Deuce Staley, he's out there, he's doing the drill with the guys, like showing them what he wants. That's not something that we've seen in the past. So the more hands-on coaching, and that starts with Dan Campbell at the top. He's very different. The attitude is there, and I think that the fact that he's building a tough, smart football team is something that is very well received. They're not the most talented, which we'll get to, but I think Matt Patricia's team's sort of underachieved relative to their talent level, and I have a feeling that Dan Campbell's teams will be the other way. I think they'll get as much as they possibly can out of every player. And that's going to be different, and that's going to be good for Detroit.
And that it's definitely a way to start. Now, the question about the Matthew Stafford trade, because after, you know, Matthew Stafford, who has been great, well, has been very good, but not necessarily great. I compare his career a lot to Carson Palmer, to where you will not find a more talented quarterback in the NFL than Matthew Stafford or Carson Palmer in terms of sheer ability, mental acuity, who just has had an okay career. That said, he was ready to be out of Detroit. But here's the thing. You look at the Matthew Stafford trade two different ways. Like a complete fleece. Because 2 first-round picks for an aging Matthew Stafford. So my take is, I didn't think of this. I watched it on TV when they're talking about this. And I want to get your take on it. Is Jared Goff, in your eyes, and do you think that the team viewed him as an asset? Because if Jared Goff is an asset in that trade, they really did ask a super high price because it was Goff plus 2 first-round picks. Or was he a liability because of his contract, and therefore it was a salary dump? It was basically a first-round pick for Stafford and then a first-round pick to take Goff's contract.
Yeah, and it's a good question, and it's been pretty clear from general manager Brad Holmes, who was part of the draft team in Los Angeles that drafted Goff. They wanted Jared Goff in this deal, and they are believers in Jared Goff. They made that pretty clear in the draft aftermath when the questions were out there. You had a shot at drafting Justin Fields. You had a shot at drafting Mac Jones. You didn't really consider either. And they acknowledge that Jared Goff is our guy. You know, we're gonna see what we've got in him. So from that standpoint, yes, they absolutely maximized what they could out of Matthew Stafford. When the Colts offer for him was a second round pick and a player who wouldn't be a major difference maker, basically what they got Carson Wentz for. It shows the respect that they had for Stafford, that Los Angeles really, really wanted him, and I get why they did. I'm not actually sold that he's going to be a great fit for Sean McVay's system, because one of the things that frustrated McVay with Goff was that Goff wouldn't or would take unnecessary risks at times when he shouldn't. And that's one of the reasons why Stafford has never quite gotten over that hump. He's a guy that will take, he's going to make some decisions that coaches are like, I don't know, man. But that's part of the cost of doing business with Matthew Stafford.
What that is ultimate trust in his arm. Carson Palmer was the same way. He's like, I don't care if he's covered. I can put that ball in that window.
Yeah, and Stafford can, and he does it often. And it was a pleasure to watch him. I hope it works for him. I root for him. I know that doesn't do the Cardinals any good
I sadly believe that, honestly, I think Stafford will – adding Stafford. I know there's some questions, but I think the Rams, for me, are the favorite in the NFC.
I don't know. Half their secondary is playing in Cleveland. I think that gets lost. And you'll talk Browns with my guy Jerry Mueller next week to learn more about that. But yeah, I hope it works for Stafford. I really do. He has done nothing but give his all the time for Detroit. It was time for him to go, and I understood why he wanted to go. I get it. I don't hold hard feelings against him. Most Lions fans get it. I think they're like, you know what? We had our time. I've said this before. I've never seen a good player disliked by a significant proportion of his fan base as much as Matthew Stafford was. There are a lot of people in Detroit that never liked Matthew Stafford.
That blamed him that they didn't win more?
Absolutely, that he's a stat padder. Stat Padford was his nickname, very derisive nickname from a lot of the Detroit radio media more than print media.
That's another comp to Carson Palmer, because that's how people viewed him in Oakland and in Cincinnati.
They did. They did. And again, like with Palmer, he never won a playoff game. You know, he didn't particularly play well in the playoffs, especially in the first playoff game that he was in back in 2011. When he threw for 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns, and then laid a stinker in the playoffs, so that people never got over that. But there's, you know, Goff's clearly not as talented as Matthew Stafford. There's no question about that. But they could have done a lot worse than what they did in solidifying the quarterback position after Matthew Stafford. Easy for me to say. They had a plan. They clearly wanted Jared Goff to be that guy. He's going to get every chance to prove himself over this year and probably next year based on his contract.
That takes us to free agency. Who are the players of note to leave? And having gone through a bad year a couple of times, oft times the players who leave are of no consequence because it was a bad year and you need to replace them. But with that, who are some notable losses? Obviously Stafford. Who are some other notable losses? And who were the players that they added in free agency that should have some sort of an impact this season?
Yeah, so they lost a lot of pass-catching talent. Marvin Jones is in Jacksonville. Kenny Golladay is with the Giants. Danny Amendola is still on the street. He won't be back in Detroit, and he can still play. He had a phenomenal year last year as a slot receiver. Mohamed Sanu, I think, is in San Francisco now. Yeah. So their top four wide receivers from last year are all gone. Adrian Peterson left. Kerryon Johnson got cut. He's now in Philadelphia. So you're looking at a significant amount of people that are gone from that. They lost. I guess technically Joe Dahl was their starting right guard last year. He wasn't supposed to be, so that's not a huge loss, but it is a starting offensive lineman that went away. Out of the secondary, Justin Coleman's gone. Desmond Trufant is gone. Christian Jones left at linebacker. Reggie Ragland was asked to leave, and he's not going to be missed. Danny Shelton is gone. I mean, you're talking about a lot of people that are gone here. Daron Harmon, who was the best safety on the team last year, is gone. So, yeah. And Matt Prater, the kicker.
He's in Arizona.
Cardinals fans will know this. He was also he was the most clutch kicker. In terms of making 50-yard game-winning field goals. Nobody in the NFL has more than him in his career.
What we're hoping here is he can hit the 40-yard ones, because that's what Zane Gonzalez could not do.
Well, so what's crazy, so Prater has a better career kicking mark from beyond 50 than he does from 40 to 49.
And that kind of makes sense, in some ways, because you kick a lot more of them. And the 50-plus are usually specific scenarios when coaches will put him out there, but you know, as long as he's, and I know last year wasn't his best year to statistically.
It was not. No,
he has a track record, and they didn't pay him too much, so it's not quite like when the Cardinals signed Phil Dawson. He should he fits exactly what the Cardinals have done personnel wise.
Yeah.
He with does. The entire team.
I will say this, he better not be your kickoff guy. You need a kickoff guy. That's not what he's good at at all. For the big leg on field goals, he's not good on kickoffs.
Well, that's interesting because both our kicker and our punter are old guys because it's Andy Lee as a punter, and I don't think that they would want him kicking off either. So yeah, we've got old guys as our as our special teamers. As our specialist.
Wow, you got a lot of years there.
and they don't have another kicker in camp. It's just Prater. They brought in a kid, Tyler Newsome, who's a punter, but all punters can kick and all kickers can punt some.
Yeah. Prater can handle the work, but that'll be something interesting for you guys to watch because they use Sam Martin as their kickoff guy, and when Sam got hurt and Prater kicked off. Some of this, I will couch that by saying that Matt Patricia loved the splash kickoff. He wanted the other team to return the ball. That was part of his strategy. That's another reason why he's unemployed now, because kicking to Cordero Patterson is probably not a good idea.
No. But if you've got a good coverage team, you can do that with most teams.
Yeah. So back to free agency. I think that's all the people of consequence that left. I mean, honestly, there weren't that many people of consequence on the Lions to begin with. So
exactly,
you're looking at a lot. Oh, Chase Daniel, the backup quarterback, is gone. Thank God. Jesse James, the number two tight end, is gone. Another thank God there. That guy was awful and a complete waste of money. And I hope that your team doesn't sign him, whoever you are. I think he wound up in. I think Pittsburgh wanted him back, and I don't know why, because it was rough. So and they brought in – so to start the new additions, they brought in Darren Fells, a veteran tight end who was here in 2017, never should have left. They finally righted the wrong. He's back. He's good. Just in the first 3 days of camp that I saw, he's already a leader on the team, and that's something that they desperately needed.
He's old, too.
He's 35.
He started with the Cardinals because he started with the Cardinals after playing basketball professionally. Yep. And one of the reasons why they let him go is because he was older. But he's still around. Yeah. He'd have been the best Cardinals tight end in years if he'd have stuck around.
Yeah, and he can still play. He's still got it. So he's an addition. A wide receiver, they have brought in Tyrell Williams, Khalif Raymond in the slot, who will also be at the return. Oh, Jamal Agnew, the return man, is gone. That's another one because they got to replace him. Khalif Raymond is going to get the first shot at that. He came from the Titans where he was their backup slot. And a pretty good return guy. And I'll tell you, watching him in the open field, obviously you're not going in mini camp with a lot of padding or anything, but dude can fly and is like a joystick. So that'll be fun to watch him play. They're taking a flyer on Breshad Perriman, who honestly, I'm not sure is going to make the team, but we'll see. Who else did they get? Running backs, they brought in Jamal Williams from the Packers, very good fit with DeAndre Swift. They are both really good receivers out of the backfield. Williams is a monster in pass protection. I don't know how well he's going to run the ball, but I expect him to catch 50-plus passes.
I really liked him as a target for the Cardinals to
he would have made sense
with Chase Edmonds. I would have loved that.
Yeah, so that seems to be a pretty positive move, and he's another guy, very ebullient personality. They're bringing back guys that are trying to have fun on the football field. Matt Patricia sent guys like Quandre Diggs, Darius Slay, Damon Harrison. They all got exiled. Now that they're welcome back, unfortunately, those guys aren't coming back. But it's guys like Williams have a lot of personality with that. So that's a big thing. Defensively, they didn't add like a lot of like big time free agents. They brought in Corn Elder. He's going to be the starting slot corner. Quentin Dunbar is going to compete as one of the outside cornerbacks opposite Jeff Okuda. And he will probably win the job based on what I've seen.
He's from high ceiling. High ceiling is what he has. Can't stay healthy. And can't stay healthy.
Yeah. that's very true. I hope it works for him because he's an interesting cat. And he's definitely a higher ceiling than Amani Arawarye, who he's competing against, who was really good as a rookie and did not play well at all last year. Nobody on the defense played well. They were the 32nd ranked pass defense And it was bad coverage. It was bad rush. It was bad. Yeah, it was
2019 Cardinals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was not good. Linebackers, they brought in, I'm blanking on it. So they drafted Derek Barnes in the fourth round, and he's probably going to wind up starting. So that tells you where that. Jamie Collins is still here. So there's not a lot there. They did trade for Michael Brockers. It's basically a free agent acquisition because the Rams were going to have to cut him to pay people. They flipped a 2023 seventh round pick for Brockers. Another guy, a lot of fun personality. This is a guy who shows up on the practice field and is trying to enjoy himself. He realizes that he's playing a kid's game. And that's very suitable for the Dan Campbell mentality. And he can still play, and the Rams are going to miss him too. And I don't think that that's getting talked up enough from the Rams side. They lost a lot of defensive talent this year.
They did.
That is playing key roles in other places, and they didn't replace them at all. And I think if you're a Cardinals fan, you have to look at that and think, we might be able to score on these guys a little bit easier than we used to. So, yeah.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we continue the conversation with Lions Wire managing editor Jeff Risden to talk about the Detroit Lions. We're going to continue with talking about the NFL draft, their draft class, and their outlook for the 21 season. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red.
Now, in the draft, who obviously you went... What?
So Penei Sewell's first round pick.
That was the surprising one because no one thought he was going to. We would have figured that's what Jalen Waddle, I felt, was the guy for Detroit. Didn't end up being available.
There was a lot of that.
But Sewell, so how are they going to use? Is he going to be right tackle this year?
Yes, he will be the starting right tackle. They've already informed Tyrell Crosby, who could be had right now in a trade if you really want him. He was the starting right tackle last year. He's serviceable, and he's a good swing backup, but I think he'd probably like to start somewhere else, and they might give him that chance if they got it, because they do have another guy in Matt Nelson, the former Iowa defensive end who's converting to tackle on the other side and has some potential at it. He actually looks like he knows what he's doing. So Sewell is a – so it came down to what Cincinnati did at number five in the draft. Cincinnati was taking either Jamar Chase or Penei Sewell. And it was pretty clear that the Lions were going to take the other one at seven. Obviously, if Miami didn't screw things up at six, which they didn't for them. So we wound up with Sewell. It's been pretty clear in the post-draft things, and they put out a draft room video last week, that Penei Sewell was the best player on their draft board entirely. He was the number one player on their board. They got him at number seven. They tried to trade up to number three to get him. They didn't need to. So they're very, very high on him. They're probably higher on him than I am. Although I will say this, I think he is a right tackle. I think that his game is best suited for there, and they have a very, very underappreciated left tackle in Taylor Decker. I don't think that Lions fans appreciate how good that dude is. He is a really, really good player, but and this is still true of him. He has one or two plays a game where you wonder if he's ever played football before, but the rest of the time, he's incredible. And he's coming off of his best year, so I like it. The bookend tackles are there, man. You've got that. That's how they're building. And then to progress in the draft, the second-round pick is Levi Onwuzurike. I almost said it wrong. Out of Washington, took the last year off. He's going to be a defensive end. He and Brockers are playing the same position. Trey Flowers also plays that position, so they're kicking him to outside linebacker, which will be interesting to see how that works. But, so they did that. Then the third round, they took Aleem McNeil out of North Carolina State, nose tackle, athletic nose. This guy played center fielder on his college baseball team to start when he got to college. He's now a 325-pound nose tackle.
Wow.
He was an option quarterback and fullback in high school. He is a freak athlete, and he has some potential. So they have gotten much more athletic on the defensive line. Onwuzurike is also a very athletically freaky guy. So they are much more dynamic athletically. Are they as talented? Maybe. We'll see. But the idea is clearly to build up in the trenches, and they've done a good job at reinforcing the lines with what they did. It's not moves that will help them win football games in 2021. It's designed for 2022 and beyond, when realistically this team has a much better window to move up quickly and the NFC North, which could be taking a massive changeover in the next couple of years at the quarterback positions. So they're sort of poised with the way that they did it this year. They're poised to like build the core of the team. And Derek Barnes in the fourth round as a linebacker. He's going to play inside linebacker. He can also play as a rush linebacker. You know, they took Ifeatu Melifonwu at cornerback. Outside cornerback, he might play some safety as well, coming out of Syracuse. He's a much better prospect than his brother was. I know his brother is a bit of a bad name, like superb athlete.
Right. I remember when Obi Melifonwu came out and it was like, oh, that guy is an athlete, but yeah, he's not done much.
He didn't like playing football. That's not true of Ify. Ify wants to get after it. so they rebuilt the core of the defense with smart, good athletes and tough football players, and all those guys fit that bill. One of the elephants in the room was that they needed a wide receiver. With all the losses that they had, and when you bring in Tyrell Williams and he's your number one with a bullet receiver, you need wide receiving help. And they didn't take that in the draft until they took Amon-Ra St. Brown in the fourth round. I was not his biggest fan either. I have since restudied him and also watched him in camp.
He's sneaky good.
He is. That's a great way to describe it. He's not a guy that's going to jump out at you as like, oh, this guy's awesome. But he's really good at what he does, and that they need that. He's probably going to be the starting slot receiver in Detroit, and he's not quite as big, not quite as fast, not quite as shifty as you would like him to be, but man, he's just really solid. And again, a smart, tough, physical, mentally tough football player. And that's, that they need that. So he's going to get a lot of opportunity to prove himself. So that's in a nutshell, that's their draft. They did use a seventh round pick on Oregon State running back Jermar Jefferson. I honestly don't know how that fits. This team has burned through so many freaking late round running back draft picks. They took one last year in the fifth round, Jason Huntley, who didn't even make the team. They had Ty Johnson from the year before, who was their best running back in 2019 as a rookie. He also got cut last year so they could keep Adrian Peterson and also Jamal Agnew, who couldn't run the ball to save his life. That's one of the reasons why we have a lot of change. So it wasn't the most thrilling pick, but
in the seventh, honestly, that's how I feel about seventh round picks. The Cardinals did the same thing. Their last pick was a center out of Penn State, Michael Minette. I'm like, why? They got Rodney Hudson. They've already got a backup. This guy's not going to make the team.
Yeah. So you wonder about things like that, but one of the things, I'll bring this up in context with Brad Holmes, the new GM, the Lions have made a conscious switch to not worry about the 40 yard dash times as much as they're talking about the GPS timed and the biometric timings. They're very big on that. And so Jefferson, I think he ran a 4.65 at his pro day, but he was timed as the fourth fastest running back in college football last year in terms of like speed. So
that's going to be interesting to see, because obviously I think that's a better measure when you're evaluating, but it makes it hard for comps. And that's one of the traditionally, that's why we use the draft comp. We have the 40 yard dash because it gives us physical comps that we can use with other players. And
absolutely.
So for our job, it's going to make it a whole lot more difficult when teams are not valuing the 40, but instead using GPS data that we might or might not have.
Yeah, we got to, and hopefully that stuff will start to get leaked out the way that, you know, the Wunderlich tests and all that stuff gets leaked out.
Right.
We do get that information. It's just not always the easiest or cleanest information. Yeah.
So looking ahead to 2021, obviously it's kind of a rebuild year, but what are sort of the expectations? What would you say would be a reasonable season, a reasonably successful season for the Lions in 2021?
Okay, so here's what I think is going to happen. I think Goff is going to be okay. I think that the receiving core that they've got, especially with TJ Hockenson, who's a budding star, I think there's going to be two or three weeks where that passing game really clicks, and that's going to catch people off guard, and they're going to smoke somebody that isn't expecting it. But by and large, this is not a good offense at all. In terms of skill positions, especially if you take Hockenson away, and if you've got linebackers and safeties that can take Hockenson away, this is probably the worst offense in the NFL. They have a very good offensive line. It has a chance to be the best offensive line in football. It really does. That doesn't help you win if you don't have skill, and they don't have the skill outside of guys that are going to give you a hiccup every now and then. And I don't mean that to disparage DeAndre Swift or Jamal Williams, but they're not. You're not talking about, you know, Todd Gurley in his prime. You're not talking about Lamar Jackson. You know, you're not talking. They just don't have that. So they're going to win games by hopefully creating more turnovers on defense. They're going to be more aggressive on defense. But there's so much transition. And such a lack of talent. And the kicker isn't there anymore. This team had more game-winning field goals over the last 5 years than any other team. And that includes a 3-13 season or 3-12-1 season. Matt Prater was really good at that. They're going to miss him. They brought in Fat Randy Bullock, who, as any Bengals fan will tell you, is about the opposite of clutch. So their ability to win close games is probably not as good as it has been. Between Stafford, who's always at his best when the chips are in the middle of the table. So I think the hope is that they're competitive, that they're tough, that they don't beat themselves, that it's a team that's showing promise for the future, and a lot of the young talent that's going to be critical to the future, guys like Okuda, guys like Tracy Walker, Swift, Sewell, center Frank Ragnow, who's probably the best center in football. They have a lot of solid building blocks there, and you hope that the rookies fill in pretty well. And you find a guy here or there that can, you know, cough up a fluke season. You know, you get those. For whatever reason, the Lions haven't had that guy in a while, like a nondescript guy who jumps up and like all of a sudden, like, wow. Like a few years ago, they had George Johnson, who they signed him off the street like 2 weeks before camp started. He wound up starting and getting like 9.5 sacks for a season. Then he went away again. You know, you have that 1 year bubble up. They haven't had that guy in a long time. So we're hoping that, you know, maybe you get that out of Khalif Raymond. Maybe you get that out of Quentin Dunbar. You know, just something like that will, you know, take some of the sting out of not, because if you look on paper, this team is probably no better than 30th in terms of overall talent. Ooh. That's just the reality of where it's at. But we know that. So we're expecting more fun football, more competitive, more engaging, smarter football. And
And biting at the knees because they're scrappy.
Absolutely. And they're not going to get outworked. They're not going to get out-toughed. And, you know, so I think that they're going to do a good job of maximizing the wins out of the roster. But having said that, the Vegas line on this team is like 5.5. And so as you know, we did the thing where you go through and you do the schedule game and you pick all the wins and losses. The most optimistic that I could be was 6-11. That's like the ceiling for this team. This is a last place football team. But they're going to be better than they were last year, even if they don't win as many games. And I think that's hopeful for the future. And this is a team
feels like 2019 for us.
This is a team that could, especially if things progress in Green Bay the way that they look like they're progressing, 2022 is a year where they can move up very quickly. They're in very good position to do that because they have two first-round picks in 2022 and 2023. They've got those draft picks there. They have their own pick, the Rams pick. They have extra third-round picks. They have an extra second-round pick in 2023. They have a lot of ability to get whatever they want next season, and they're still in very good cap shape. So this is their year where they figure out, okay, let's start we're starting over. Who's with us? Who's not going to be with us for the long haul? That's what this year is all about. And if they win a few games along the way, that's even better. But this is a team that we'll be picking probably in the top five, top six again. But most fans, most fans are pretty. We've hit radical acceptance with that. We're like, you know what? We were going to be terrible with Patricia. Let's at least be interesting and fun and bring some life back to the city and then life back to the team.
So yes, it's going to be bad, but entertaining and promising for.
Yes,
forward.
Definitely. So I'll equate it. So as you know, I do cover the Browns as well. And I equate it to the misbegotten Freddie Kitchens season of 2019 in Cleveland, where there was a team that had a lot of potential, but it was a lot of young pieces that we were trying to figure out how to get together. And Freddie Kitchens couldn't coach his way out of a paper bag. That's just very unfortunate because I like Freddie.
Right.
And I know he came from Arizona and he was a good dude there too. Yes. And I think he's a good positional coach, but as a head coach, oh my God, it was embarrassing. I've never seen anybody who would insist that he's not going to answer a question and then spend 10 minutes answering the question. It was a nightmare, dude. But I digress. I think Dan Campbell's going to work. I really do. And I think the assistants that he's got are going to work. It's a smart group. Aaron Glenn is a guy that's going to get a lot of head coaching looks next year if the Lions defense upgrades, and I think they will. They're going to be difficult to handle, especially for teams that rely a lot on serviceable offensive lines instead of good offensive lines. Like they're going to attack, and Trey Flowers, Romeo Okwara, Jamie Collins can still attack. And Derek Barnes is an attack dog downhill. They're going to be difficult to play. And I think that's the mentality going forward. But again, this is not going to equal a lot of wins. So I got them like 4, 5, 6 wins. They like I said, they're going to have games where the offense just clicks, and they're going to shock one team, one good team. I don't know who it'll be. Hopefully it's Green Bay because we don't like Green Bay. It could be they could go in and beat the Rams in Los Angeles. And I think that would be very
Rams-like.
Yes, it would. And it would be, honestly, it would be very Stafford-like too. that's sort of the game that everybody has circled on the calendar. It's like, oh, it'd be really nice to win that one. That's week 7. That's our only primetime game. So that will be most Cardinals fans' only chance to watch the new look Detroit Lions, unless you really, really care.
You're gonna have to get a ticket.
yeah, they're not going to be on TV a lot. This is a team.
Well, especially not out here. Definitely not out here.
Yeah, that's it is what it is. You know, we're ready for something new, and I think they're moving definitely in the right direction. It's a positive thing. We're ready to take our lumps this year. We're hopeful that it will be tolerable. And thus far, it's been better than that. And that's the sun is shining on Detroit again. So all the Detroit teams in pro sports right now are awful. The Pistons suck. The Red Wings are the worst they've ever been. Oh. The Tigers are not good, and they're all like sort of in various different styles and types and phases of the early part of the rebuild. Now, I don't know anything about baseball. I don't follow it at all. But I know that the Lions are doing better than the Pistons are, and they're probably doing better than the Red Wings are in terms of getting the ground running. So that's a positive.
Excellent. That, my friends, is Jeff Risden, who's given us all sorts of content, probably more content you ever needed to know about the Lions.
I'm sure.
But this is a fantastic episode. I appreciate your time, Jeff, as always. I mean, the Cardinals might end up playing the Lions again next year. Who knows? Hopefully, well, honestly, hopefully not. If the Cardinals should not have a last place schedule.
I would say I would be surprised if the Cardinals had a last place schedule, and I would be surprised if the Lions don't.
So maybe it'll be a couple years from now, but appreciate your time, Jeff. Thanks so much.
And that will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk, although episode 315. We have one more preview show that will drop the end of this week on Friday. And then next week, we will have our training camp preview with Seth Cox from Revenge of the Birds back with us in the normal format that we have when we're hitting probably a show a week here starting next week until the end of the season. Thanks for listening. Go Cardinals. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red C-Red, and of course, Rise Up C-Red.
Rise up! Rise! Rise!